This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 11th of October 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 10th of October 2024. Your readers today are Hilary Parsons.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Heather Bryant.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Jail for Road Rage Driver After Attack, City Parking Charges Up 10p Per Hour, and one of the UK's biggest EV charging hubs taking shape. So we will start with the story behind the first headline.
Jail for road rage driver after attack. Driver repeatedly punched couple in frenzied incident. An enraged motorist who attacked a couple in Winchester has been jailed for 4.5 years. Joe Conroy Hellstrip battered John and Anne Arthur after their car had briefly blocked the road late in June 2023. Conroy Hellstrip of Brocade Road, Andover, repeatedly punched the couple, both then aged 65, outside their home in Western Road, Fullflood, a court heard. The judge said the reason for the moment of extreme violence was a mystery. Sentencing, Judge Paul Dugdale said, "We have no idea why you behaved in that way, in this short moment of extreme violence. A redness descended upon you and you knocked Mr. Arthur to the ground, punching him twice in the head and then repeatedly whilst he was laying unconscious. Then, as his wife, he believed him to be dead, came to his aid and you punched her too, breaking her nose and knocking her to the ground. Why a 23-year-old of good character, whilst in a car with a 12-month-old daughter and 5-month pregnant wife, would do this, we will never know. It is a tragic event, tragic for you and tragic for the Arthurs." The trial at Winchester Crown Court heard that John and Anne Arthur were returning home from music practice when Conroy Hellstrip, now 25, entered the road in his car with his girlfriend, Samantha Gomez. Mr. Arthur had blocked the road for a short time to unload his and his wife's musical instruments, and Mr. Conroy Hellstrip became enraged at the time he had to wait. After beeping twice and then passing Mr. Arthur with an additional beep of the horn, he waited at the end of the road at the junction leading onto Stockbridge Road. Mr. Arthur went to speak to the defendant to ask why he was beeping, and it was then that Conroy Hellstrip got out of his car and assaulted Mr. Arthur and his wife, Anne. Conroy Hellstrip was described as getting calmly back into his car and driving away. In this time, local neighbours treated Mr. and Mrs. Arthur's head wounds and called for an ambulance. A neighbour, Amanda Porter, who helped treat Mr. Arthur, said, "I have never heard a man sound so terrified. He kept saying, 'My head, my head. Where's my wife? Is she okay? I was just asking him why he was beeping.'" Another neighbour, Alex Jacobs, said, "I heard a blood-curdling scream coming from down the road. I could see a female laying on the floor in great pain." The judge sentenced Conroy Hellstrip to 4.5 years on two accounts of wounding with intent. Two accounts. The trial lasted a week and the jury spent a day deliberating, and they reached a majority verdict of 10-2 on the attack on Mr. Arthur, but a unanimous verdict on the assault on Mrs. Arthur. As the verdicts were announced, Conroy Hellstrip, smartly dressed in a suit, shook his head. In the victim impact statements, Mrs. Arthur said, "It was the first time that I have ever been hit, the first time I have been taken to hospital in an ambulance and stayed overnight, and it was the first time seeing an attack. I thought my husband was going to die. I still have so many questions. How could you continue to punch someone as they lie unconscious?" Mr. Arthur said, "I wonder what your last 15 months were like. a few seconds washing the blood from your hands, some inconvenient times having to come to court. Mine have been hell. The panic that I felt that night as I thought I was having a stroke, having to rush Anne to the hospital several days after as her nose wouldn't stop bleeding. The emotional feelings of the attack. I am still anxious of strangers on the street. But the one positive was that your own horrible act showed us so many positive acts from neighbours, friends and family.
City parking charges up 10 pence per hour. Parking charges in Winchester city centre have increased once more. The City Council increased Zone 1 parking charges in car parks by 10 pence per hour from October the 1st. A spokesperson for Winchester City Council described the increase as inflationary and stressed that it is limited to the central parking zone of the city. This means that rather than £1.80 for an hour, drivers must pay £1.90, and for parking over 4 hours, the price has risen from £17 to £18. Also, parking for up to 6 hours at the Brook Centre or Middlebrook Street car parks on Saturdays and Sundays has risen from £7 to £7.50. Some residents have expressed irritation within the wider context of parking in the city centre. In a letter to the Chronicle, Fred White wrote that the residents of the Q and R residential parking zones were being, quote, disregarded and disrespected, unquote, by councillors after having raised concerns about parking problems. There is also continued confusion around whether residents will continue to have access to free parking in car parks on Sundays when on-street parking is free for visitors. A spokesperson for WCC said, "The park and walk car parks, which are just a short walk from the city centre, haven't changed. They all offer a free one-hour parking and are also free to park in on evenings and Sunday too. These include Chesil Street Multistory, River Park, Cattle Market, Worthy Lane. There are no charges to park and ride either."
One of UK's biggest EV charging hubs is taking shape. One of the biggest electrical vehicle charging hubs in the country is being built near Winchester, next to a new anaerobic digestion plant. Drone footage of the area shows the huge projects under construction at Three Maids Hill next to the solar farm near Littleton. Planning officers had argued against the EV site, but the planning committee overruled them, approving the plans last December, permitting Basingstoke-based Instavolt to build the huge site. In April, Hampshire County Council also approved an application to build an anaerobic digestion facility. The aim of the facility is to provide renewable carbon negative energy for the UK by producing biomethane. The site will also produce two byproducts, digestate, which will be used as fertiliser on local farms, and CO2, which can be used for industrial purposes. The site will be approximately 5 hectares and open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday to Sunday. During peak harvest periods, working hours will be extended as deemed necessary. Construction for the EV hub began in June, and in less than 4 months, the site has been completely transformed.
That concludes our headline stories, and next we have the death announcements. Brentnell. Patricia Kathleen Brentnell, known as Trish, at Basingstoke Hospital on the 15th of September, aged 77. Chapman. Peter Chapman, at home on the 28th of September, aged 75. Coombs, Dorry Joan Coombs, née Bailey, on the 21st of September, aged 91. Duncan, John Duncan, at home on the 14th of September, aged 87. Gunner, Patricia Edith Gunner, née Leach, on the 19th of September, aged 91. Hanson, David Hanson, at home on the 18th of September. Mayers, Maureen Mayers, at home on the 21st of September, aged 97. Mumford, David Kenneth Mumford, at Brookdale Care Home, Chandler's Ford, on the 17th of September, aged 89. Newell, Valerie Sinclair Newell, on the 16th of September, aged 85. Nicholson, Eunice Valerie Nicholson, at Winchester Hospice, on the 21st of September, aged 67. Next, we have Christian Comment.
Christian Comment this week has been sent by Nigel Hemming. It's entitled Four Vital Qualities of Leadership. It's common to hear about Christian leaders who are no longer in ministry because of poor behaviour, ranging from sexual impropriety to coercive control and spiritual abuse. Whether out in the public media or closer to home in local congregations, a fallen leader causes pain for victims, families, and congregations, and does irreparable damage to the wider church and the name of God. The Bible's leadership standards are applicable to both the church and the wider world. In 1 Timothy 3, Paul emphasizes the need for character over skill, and you could summarize this into four key leadership traits. Leaders are kind. Kindness is a quality I look for in anyone I meet, and particularly in those who I might expect to be influenced by. When someone fails to display a basic level of kindness to me, it negates everything else they might say or do. Charlotte Armitage points out, to truly offer kindness shows a level of psychological strength and resilience, which is grounded in acceptance of oneself. This level of acceptance requires a significant amount of internal strength and takes hard work to achieve. Leaders are humble. Leaders should not be the type of people who are looking for power or position or constantly broadcasting their achievements to the world. The Bible is clear about the need for humility. In Philippians 2, Paul's encouragement is to have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. We've met a people over the years who come to church looking for some kind of public leadership position, and we invite them to join our stewarding, refreshments, or welcome team, just to see how willing they are to get on with whatever needs doing. Leaders have integrity. When challenged about sharing his faith in public, the athlete, Chris Akabusi, responded, "I do preach, but only in my church, so they can see if my walk matches up with my talk." It's so important that leaders not only do the right thing, but are seen to do the right thing. Christian leaders should be an open book. We give up our right to privacy to foster transparency, so that those outside the organisation can see that we are living with integrity. Leaders are emotionally healthy. Understanding how our emotions impact on those around us is one of the most important things I have learned in my life and taught my children as they have grown. Although the actions of fallen church leaders are rarely excusable, a lack of insight and emotional health often goes some way towards providing some explanation for their poor behaviour. Pete Scazzaro sums up his extensive writing on this subject beautifully. The emotionally unhealthy leader is someone who operates in a continuous state of emotional and spiritual deficit, lacking emotional maturity and a being with God, sufficient to sustain their doing for God. If you have been hurt by a leader's poor behaviour, then I am so sorry, and I honestly believe there is healing and freedom available. My prayer is for disciples everywhere, that we continue to grow kindness, humility, integrity, and emotional health as we follow Jesus together. And the Christian comment was sent by Nigel Hemming, who is the senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, that's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've 10 letters this week, and we'll start off with the first one,
which comes from Mary Pearson, and it's entitled Stand Up for the Bus Station. I wonder how many Winchester residents realise that unless they formally object before 11:59pm on October the 13th, there will no longer be a bus station in central Winchester. Instead, buses may be incorporated into a transport interchange near the railway station. The relevant information, not immediately obvious, is on page 85 of a lengthy publication named Your Place, Your Plan, a title some may choose to amend to Our Place, Your Plan. The entry reads as follows. 5.55. Move the bus station to the rail station area and develop the site with city centre uses. No cities and towns are alike, and whilst transport interchanges may work for some, there are others, Winchester for one, I feel, where they would not. Due to Winchester's history and physical geography, the city centre is situated on a limited area of flat ground. The tourist office, cathedral, sites of historical interest, civic offices, shopping centre, market, river and main parks, together with the bus station, are all there, conveniently, in a relatively small space. The present bus station has much to commend it. Some distance from Winchester's busy road system, it is quiet, airy and spacious. Buses and information screens are clearly visible, and unlike many narrow plastic public benches, the seating is functional. On level ground, and with the main shops and the market nearby, the bus station is well placed to meet the needs of passengers with pushchairs, limited mobility, and heavy shopping bags. In short, Winchester's residents, shops, market traders, restaurants, and tourist venues all benefit from a central bus station, and car use is reduced. No doubt the City Council already has plans for the bus station sale proceeds, but I urge councillors to put these plans to one side and to consider what local people, many of whom are unaware of the proposed sale, would want. I believe that many would opt to retain Winchester's bus station. Constituents may not be the keen cyclists and walkers that councillors would like them to be, but whatever their lifestyles, I believe their needs and wishes should be respected. I hope that residents and visitors alike will continue to enjoy the convenience of having a bus station where it's needed, in the city centre. That's from Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Winnall, Winchester.
Okay.
This letter from Rosemary Poole is also concerning the bus station. When I first came to work in Winchester about 50 years ago, the sign over the entrance to the bus station read, Winchester Omnibus Station. There was a certain ring to the word omnibus which evoked another time, a time more associated with Winchester of the past. The name seemed totally appropriate, but some time later, this sign was replaced with the sign we have now. As far as I am aware, Winchester City Council purchased the bus station from Stagecoach in 2017. Since then, the Central Winchester Regeneration Scheme has come into being, though it has had many lives, and seems as though the bus station is going to be sacrificed. Of course, I understand that the council has a duty to raise money to fund the hundreds of projects needed by the town, and it is inevitable that an area destined for the scrap heap will not be looked after in the interim period. The letters to the Chronicle bear witness to its present neglected state. It's silly to be sentimental about a bus station, but I hate the idea of change for change's sake, which I think is at play here. There is nothing the matter with the bus station that a good clean-up and refurbish would not put right. It is ideally situated within walking distance of the cathedral, the shops, market stalls, and after a long journey, tourists need to sit down and relax, which would not be possible if the bus stops returned to the streets, as is proposed. Finally, at a time when we are encouraged to reduce the time we spend on the road in our cars, surely it is the wrong time to rid ourselves of our bus station. So I wonder if anyone else feels as I do, that in an important tourist destination such as Winchester, our lovely, unloved old bus station should have a reprieve. This from Rosemary Pool, St James's Villas.
And a letter sent by John Pittman, entitled Weeds Woe, also considers the bus station. I recently sent a letter to the Chronicle regarding the weeds in and around the streets of Winchester. Other letters and articles reported in your paper have complained about the state and condition of the bus station. I visited Winchester on Saturday, and nothing has changed since my last visit. There were even more weeds, and the state of the bus station was again disgusting. Could I ask our new MP and councillors to take a walk around our city and just see what I and others are complaining about? With the thousands of visitors due to arrive shortly to visit the Christmas market, could I please request that the city and county councillors take a good look before they all arrive and try to once again make Winchester a city to be proud of? That was John Pittman from Tor Close, Albrook in Eastleigh.
Overseed Aid is the title of this letter from Hannah Day. For many vulnerable people around the world, UK foreign aid has been the difference between life and death. The previous Conservative government's decision to reduce international aid spending from 0.7% to 0.5% of gross national income, GNI, had severe consequences, withholding billions of pounds from countries most in need. This decision has impacted thousands of lives, leaving communities without essential resources such as food, water, shelter, and medical care. As a resident of Hampshire, I believe it is important for our community to support the restoration of the 0.7% commitment to overseas aid. One organisation working tirelessly to advocate for this is the Borgen Project, which champions global poverty reduction through increased foreign aid and humanitarian assistance. By raising awareness, engaging lawmakers, and mobilising grassroots support, the Borgen Project highlights how crucial international aid is, not just for those directly affected, but for creating a more stable and prosperous world for all. The Liberal Democrats share this vision and remain firmly committed to allocating 0.7% of GNI to international development. Foreign aid is not just about charity. It is an investment in a safer, more stable world, which ultimately benefits us all. This funding is vital for responding to immediate humanitarian crises, but it also plays a crucial role in advancing strategic international objectives like gender equality, climate change, human rights, and reducing inequality. By supporting overseas aid, we are helping to build a more just and sustainable future for everyone, including future generations in Hampshire. I urge Hampshire residents to support the work of the Borgen Project and join the call for the UK to return to its 0.7% aid commitment, continuing to play a leading role in tackling the world's most pressing challenges. That letter is from Hannah Day, Borgen Project Advocate, St Cross Road, Winchester.
This letter from Mary White is headed Hospital Heroes. Recently, having had minor surgery at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, the stitches were to be removed by my GP surgery. But due to an error in their appointment system, no one was available for the procedure. So I made my way to the hospital. After explaining the problem to the receptionist at outpatients, she was extremely helpful, leaving her desk and going to the appropriate department. In a very short time, my stitches were removed by a very pleasant and caring nurse. I was on my way home in just over an hour. Considering I had no appointment, the treatment I received was exemplary. Thank you to two very special ladies. From Mary White, Gordon Road, Curdridge.
This letter was sent by Mike Sherwood, entitled Pay Up Now. Instead of pussyfooting about, why doesn't the government pay immediately the wronged postmasters and postmistresses £1 million each, or the balance up to that sum for those who have already received some monies? As a pensioner, I would be quite prepared to stop moaning about the heartless withdrawal of the winter fuel payment if I thought that some of the money saved could be directed towards those so unjustly accused. And that letter was sent by Mike Sherwood, Wrights Close in South Wanston.
Very frightening, writes Eileen Berry. The proposal to build probably around 800 new homes on the John Moore Barracks is very, very frightening. Inasmuch as that we have still got over 1,000 homes to be built on Barton Farm. It's obvious once again that the closure or proposed closure of Andover Road is going to be disastrous. Why? Simply because every vehicle, every car, every ambulance, fire engine, bus routes are going to be impacted in a way that has not been fully understood. Where are they going? How are they going to get into Winchester? Through Barton Farm? All of them? Or through Hairstock? All of them? Think about it. It's going to be the biggest headache. Closing Andover Road might be beneficial for 10 residents at the expense of thousands suffering. This has not been thought out. The future impact is not understood. And we have not even considered when another school is needed. Transport, shopping, shops, all sorts of other things were being proposed for Barton Farm, which so far have not materialised. When it does, and as I've said many times, with the population explosion happening everywhere, but particularly in these favoured places like Winchester, I am fearful of the decisions that are being made. We're not really thinking about the future consequences. You don't shut down a road, an ancient Roman road that has caused no problems at all in the past. It never has. If you lay down so much concrete that flooding is becoming normal, it's not just a little flooding, it covers whole sections of roads. We are not learning that you can't lay concrete, take out trees, build on wetlands, and expect that Mother Nature will stop what she does. That letter is from Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
This letter from Lawrence Jones is headed Solar Farm and a Front to Democracy. Without any involvement, I find the announcement that the City Council planners have approved the plans for a solar farm in Sparsholt to be an affront to democracy. It is reported in the article by Chris Atkinson, Chronicle, October 3rd, that 160 letters of objection have been submitted, and the local councillor for Sparsholt opposed the plans. Another councillor stated that the solar farm is in the wrong location, and no attempts appear to have been made for the many alternative locations being considered, public opinion being in favour of solar farms. However, the committee was evenly split, with four members in favour and four against. The chairman, Councillor Jane Rutter, using her casting vote to approve the plans. I strongly suggest the chairman should not have voted in view of the importance of the application and strength of public opposition. She should have referred back for more consideration. Lawrence Jones, Dean Lane, Winchester.
And Simon Lever sends in a letter entitled Solar Suggestion. Although anything is better than wind power, which is not wholly reliable and destroys views of our pristine landscape, solar farms have a similar effect upon farmland, as reported in the Chronicle on October the 3rd. The agreement to proceed with the latest solar farm imposes upon Greenbelt land, and nearby residents were against it. Would it not be feasible to include solar panels on all new houses and commercial structures? Further, an idea I have is to fit a solar panel to new cars. Not a total solution, but it would lessen the need for recharging from mains electricity. Perhaps celery and white asparagus could be farmed under the panels. And that's been sent by Simon Lever, Juniper Close Badger Farm in Winchester.
This letter, which is nothing to do with asparagus at all, is from Tony Gaster. I think that's how you say his name. And it's entitled Carbon Curbs. I am sure most thinking people see the need to reduce fossil fuels. But surely we need to see the whole picture. As far as I know, the infrastructure for petrol and diesel vehicles exists, so no new carbon footprint. Yet I read about the huge construction near Winchester for a charging station, and everywhere charging points for EVs. Surely that is not zero carbon. Isn't the issue that we need to use our vehicles less than we did? That will make a difference. The trouble is that few of us will take such action. For those unconvinced, have not recent weather events the world over shown us all what is happening? Maybe the government does have to take tough decisions, and soon. But meanwhile, we do need to recognise switching to EVs is not carbon-free. So writes Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment.
This is headed Ratcheting Up the Cost of Parking. Parking charges have again risen in Winchester. As we report on page 3, the cost has increased by about 10p an hour in the central car parks. It means that a day's parking in the Brook Centre is now £18, up from £17. Parking in parts of Brighton now costs around £30 a day. Is this where Winchester is heading? City Council leader Martin Todd has cited Brighton as a successful place where there is no bus station, and it looks as if Winchester is following suit in getting rid of its bus station in favour of some sort of hub at the railway station. That is being proposed in the local plan currently being consulted on and the subject of readers' letters in today's paper. Over parking charges, will Winchester follow Brighton's lead and really thump the motorist? This is nothing new. For the last 30 years, the council has increased the cost of parking in the city centre to encourage people to use the park and ride on the edges. It has cross-party support, with both Conservatives and Liberal Democrats supporting the general thrust of the policy. Perhaps the Lib Dems do want to carry on ratcheting up the cost of parking in the city to Brighton levels. It broadly has support for its parking policy, except for the few diehards who want to be able to park outside the shop of their choice as if it was 1957. But it would be helpful if the Lib Dems outlined where they see this going over the next few years. It may well be controversial, but with 33 councillors as opposed to the 12 Conservatives, 3 Greens and 1 Independent, the Lib Dems are unlikely to be losing power any time soon.
And now first person.
This is Budget Jitters from Lady in Red by Khalid Aziz. I am getting the jitters, and I am not alone. Everyone I talk to has them too. In a couple of weeks, we'll have a budget which has been long awaited with no small amount of trepidation. On October the 30th, we'll know what Rachel Reeves, the first female in 800 years' worth of chancellors of the Exchequer, has up her sleeve. Recent budgets have been relatively tame affairs. The emphasis has been on steady as she goes. Don't rock the boat. Don't frighten the horses. If we believe the febrile media commentary, there are going to be a lot of capsized boats and bolted horses. In reality, none of us is any the wiser. What we do know is that Britain's finances, as with previous budgets, are incredibly tight. There are immense demands on the Exchequer, chiefly as a result of the relative sickness of our workforce. COVID still haunts us. Hardly a week goes by and we don't hear of someone testing positive again. Thanks to the immunity offered by vaccinations, symptoms are in the main mild. But the debilitation is often enough for the sufferer to take some days off work. Then there are the long COVID sufferers, those who have never gone back to work, over 2.5 million, if we are to believe the stats. It's the same all over the Western world, not exclusively in Britain. However, we seem to struggle more. The problem with having a fifth of the potential workforce on the sick is not just that they're not working and therefore not paying tax, but that the majority are in receipt of benefits, which now come primarily from those who are still working. All we are saying is that we want those with the broader shoulders to pay a little more, say MPs, helpfully rolling the pitch for the pain to come. Who can be against that? The trouble is, those with the really broad shoulders in an increasingly connected world can choose to pay less tax elsewhere. £500,000 will buy you citizenship in any number of warm jurisdictions where you won't be troubled by much tax. The Pimlico Plumbers founder, Charlie Mullins, has already walked with much trumpeting. Others, such as the country's favourite businessman, inexplicably to many in business, Sir Richard Branson, made that decision nearly 2 decades ago when he moved to Necker in the Caribbean. It's those of us who remain, the squeezed middle classes, who'll shoulder most of the added tax burden. Perhaps this time the pips really will squeak, as former Chancellor Dennis Healey demanded 50 years ago, although then he was talking only about property developers. Individual tax burden is higher than it's ever been. It's about the total tax take. Rachel Reeves has telegraphed a budget for growth. Our economy is consumer-based. Tax is a brake on spending, because if you don't have it, you can't spend it. VAT is the real killer. 50 years ago, VAT replaced purchase tax at a modest 10%. It's now double that. A recent bill for some simple but necessary plumbing at home resulted in a bill for £720. £120 of which goes straight to the Treasury. Our high streets are boarded up eyesores, thanks in part to business rates. Successful shops can find themselves paying an effective tax rate combining corporation tax with business rates of 65%. A radical budget for growth could see a downward tracking of VAT and rates. I am not holding my breath. Finally, am I the only one struck by Rachel Rees's change of image a few weeks ago? She binned her rather austere black widow look, dyed her hair red, and announced her new look sporting a bright red blouse. Channeling her inner Angela Rayner? Perhaps. But in the run-up to a budget, I prefer my chancellors to be in the black rather than the red.
Some what's on announcements. In Winchester Cathedral, until the 5th of November, there is an art exhibition entitled Borrowed Breath by Lawrence Edwards. From Saturday the 12th of October till Monday the 4th of November at the Winchester Science Centre, they're having a science spooktacular, so presumably related to Halloween and all that kind of thing. On Saturday the 19th of October in Winchester Cathedral, there is an evening of Radiohead. And then on from Saturday the 26th of October to Sunday the 3rd of November on the Watercress line is Wizard Week. So I think it's still related to Halloween. Sunrise at the moment is around 7:30 in the morning and sunset is around 6:30 in the evening. If you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have a problem with the recordings you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And the number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
Farm boss was at fault, manslaughter trial told. A Hampshire farmer accused of manslaughter did not provide his workers with instructions to carry out a job safely, witnesses say. As previously reported, Philip Tickner, 63, of Upper Lanham, Old Alsford, is charged with manslaughter through gross negligence over the death of Philip France, 57, on June 7, 2021. He denies the charge. At Winchester Crown Court, the jury heard how Tickner had asked Mr. France, along with two other farm workers, to dismantle the fiberglass roof of a lean-to shed adjoining a large barn at the 850-acre Upper Lanham farm, which the defendant runs and partly owns. Now, two farm workers are saying that Tickner did not provide them with tools or instructions on how to carry out the job. Thomas Moody, who has worked for Tickner since 2009, said that he and Paul Daubney, a self-employed gardener and handyman, had been asked to work with Mr. France on dismantling the roof on June the 2nd. Mr. Moody, who still works for Tickner, said that the plan was for the three men to start taking the roof off the barn as soon as the work day began at 8 a.m. However, Mr. Daubney was running late due to a prior job which had overrun, with Tickner telling Mr. Moody and Mr. France to start working on the barn at midday whilst they waited for Mr. Daubney to arrive. Mr. Moody told the court that despite being asked to help with the roof, neither he nor Mr. France had any formal training to work at height. Mr. Moody said that he was not shown any paperwork such as a risk assessment prior to starting work, and that Tickner did not provide any guidance or equipment to the two men. The farm worker said, "I understood that we had to start taking the roof off. We could make our own decision from there. Phil," that's Tickner, "did not tell us how to get onto the roof and did not tell us what tools to use. He gave us no instruction on how to start removing the slates from the roof." Mr. Moody said that he and Mr. France worked out a system where they would use an angle grinder to to cut the tops of the bolts holding the sheets making up the roof to the frame of the building and take them off. They would then put the sheets onto a pallet on a telehandler, with Mr. Daubney arriving to help them with the process at approximately 2:15 p.m. The three men covered the skylight nearest to where the telehandler was located with a fiberglass board, but did not cover the other skylights. The trial continues.
This item is headed Purple Nightwalkers Raise Cash for Hospice. A charity walk through Winchester's historic centre has returned for another successful year. The Purple Night Walk 2024, organised by Winchester Hospice to raise funds for their services to those with terminal and severe illness, saw hundreds of purple-clad participants take on the 6-kilometre route throughout the city. Accompanied by a rendition of I'm Gonna Be 500 Miles, courtesy of the Moon Roller Band, the walkers set off at twilight from the Pilgrim School. Some were there for support, others to remember loved ones who have passed away. One walker, Laura Gray, 45, said, "My cousin was at the hospice and passed away recently. She didn't want a funeral, so we've come to celebrate Ellie here. For her family, it just gave them a safe place where she was in good hands, and they were also in good hands." As the walkers went on, the Chronicle dropped into the Wickham Arms, where Purple Night Walkers sponsor, Nonnie Kerr Smiley, estate agent, was enjoying a drink with husband Sam. She said, "Winchester Hospice is the most excellent place, providing end-of-life care in a warm and bright environment with caring staff and a feeling of hope, and we are very proud to sponsor it." Mrs. Kerr Smiley explained that her eponymous company has funded the hospice throughout the year, and especially this event. Also present was last year's sponsor, John Leeson of Belgarum, another estate agent in Winchester. The Moon Roller Band were there to help raise money and awareness for the cause. Band leader Andy Martin, 71, said, "We're a spin-off of the Winchester Uke Jam, and the hospice is our chosen charity. All the stuff we do, we don't get paid for it. We do it for charity." The walk ended at Winchester Cathedral, where walkers were presented with medals.
And this piece is entitled Leadership Role for Nursing Apprentice, and there's a photograph of Bronwyn during her visit to Sri Lanka with a staff member. And we'll go on to find out about Bronwyn. A University of Winchester nursing apprentice has been selected for a prestigious leadership scheme. Registered nurse apprentice Bronwyn Flower Bond is one of the chosen few to be part of the Council of Deans for Health's 150 student leadership programme. The programme aims to promote and develop the future generation of nurses, midwives and allied healthcare professionals by working with first and second year students. Bronwyn, who began her nursing apprenticeship in 2023, works as a healthcare assistant at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in the Acute Assessment Unit. The 26-year-old started her career with the NHS during the height of the COVID pandemic, having previously worked in a care home. She now balances her studies with her hospital job. Bronwyn said, "I would definitely recommend the University of Winchester. I like the fact that we come into the university for in-person learning and how our work placements are spread through the year and across three different places, giving us a wider experience." She expressed her gratitude to her tutors for encouraging her to apply for the 150 student programme. Bronwyn was one of just 60 out of 275 applicants to gain a place on the programme, which has an online coaching scheme with access to individuals who are visionary leaders in thinkers, creators and front runners in their respective disciplines.
Running in Rowley's Honour. A charity run through the Hampshire countryside has proven a huge success for the sixth year running. Rowley's Run, held each year in honour of Rich Walklate after his sudden and unexpected death at 33, saw dozens of participants take on the trail through the Meon Valley. In May 2018, Rich, also known as Rowley, suddenly died. This extremely active and fit young man fell very ill over a weekend, and in less than a week he had passed away. His family was devastated. He had two elder sisters, one of whose partners was Rich's best friend since childhood. He had four nieces and nephews, all at the time below the age of five. Unbeknownst to most of his friends and family, Rich had achieved so much in his short life. He had a very important job, which very few knew about. He had played both chess and badminton at junior county level. He had participated in triathlons, Ironman events, and in November 2017 became the first GB athlete to cross the line in the highest marathon in the world, the starting point being just below base camp on Everest. 3 weeks before he died, Rich had run the Manchester Marathon in his best ever time, just 3 minutes over 3 hours. Very few people knew, because Rich just did all this and kept it to himself. He would also go out of his way to help and encourage others. It staggered the family that the week after his death, well over 700 people took part in the Cheltenham Park Run, where he had been a co-director. The previous Cheltenham record was just in excess of 500. Because he lived on his own in Cheltenham and didn't say much, the family had assumed that he had few friends. How wrong they were. His best friend, Carlos, was determined that Rich would be remembered and determined to honour him by instigating Rowley's Run. Rowley was Rich's nickname from his badminton days. A lot of money is raised for charity through the event, including the Papworth Hospital charity, Papworth being where Rich was treated in 2014. He had been born with a biscupid heart valve, and surgeons at Papworth operated on Rich to insert the third valve. Rich then made a complete recovery and returned to full fitness. When the autopsy into his death was carried out, his valve was intact and hadn't failed. Rather, it was agreed that the most likely cause of his sudden death was sepsis. Because of this, virtually all money raised in Rich's name is split between three charities: the Papworth Hospital Charity, the UK Sepsis Trust, and Help for Heroes. It was discovered after his death that Rich made regular donations to Help for Heroes, and the family wanted to continue this support. Since 2018, nearly £40,000 has been raised in Rich's name.
This item is headed Night Star Bus for Late Night Weekenders. A bus company is promoting its weekend night bus service linking Winchester and Southampton. Blue Star's Night Star 1, N1, service between Southampton and Winchester runs during the small hours on Friday and Saturday nights, technically Saturday and Sunday mornings. Three buses leave from Southampton after midnight, 1:10, 2:40 and 4:10 a.m., while two depart from Winchester, 1:55 and 3:25 a.m. This means that those looking to go out on the town can do so without worrying about having to get on a bus to go home early. The Night Star 1 also stops at a series of villages, including Bassett, Shawford, Compton and Otterbourne, and Chandler's Ford. Blue Star posted the following message on its website. Whether you're an early bird or a night owl, we've got you covered every Friday and Saturday night. Whatever your plans are, be it a night on the town, an early train connection, or a night shift, our N1 bus service between Winchester and Southampton is an ideal way to travel. It's really good value too. Evening fares after 6 p.m. are just £1, and then N1 fares are £2 until December 31st. We are sure residents and local students will find this service great value. Don't forget to download the Blue Star app, where you can track your bus in live time. So no standing around for longer than you need to at a bus stop.
This article is Mayor Praises the Work of Boas Project Charity. The Mayor of Winchester has praised the charity for its work with people with learning disabilities. Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith visited the Boas Project, based at Hill Farm near Sutton Scotney, to learn more and explore its refurbished woodwork machine shop. The Boas Project is a farm-based charity that helps provide a better future for people with learning disabilities. The Mayor said, "It is hard to overstate my admiration for the Boas Project, which runs on a site of some 4 acres. The staff and volunteers teach groups of adults with special needs useful skills, looking after hens, sheep and a donkey or two, growing vegetables and flowers, cooking meals for the group and making craft goods. The members learn to work, to socialise and to value and take care of themselves. I experienced a wonderful caring atmosphere and people taking care of animals, plants and each other, outdoors in fresh air, and I take my hat off to all involved." Stuart Palmer, General Manager at the Boas Project, said, "It was lots of fun showing the mayor around, in particular showing off our recently refurbished woodwork machine shop. We are keen to invite budding and or hobby woodworkers to come and enjoy our workshop facilities for themselves, rather like the men's shed movements. The Boas Project's woodworking facilities are available for use by external groups on Tuesdays. The project would also like to hear from volunteers who have woodworking skills. Get in touch with them to find out more by visiting their website."
Thought-provoking law festival in the dock. Winchester City Centre is hosting a thought-provoking law festival this week with a variety of events. Law Week 2024 is the second outing for the Law, Crime and Criminal Justice focused festival. The event aims to explore the criminal justice system and contemporary policing through performance, literature, workshop and inquiry. The week-long event will be held at various places across Winchester, including the Cathedral, the University and the Law Courts. Organiser Sean Romaine said, "We hope our unusual and stimulating events help people to look beyond the tabloid headlines, providing new insights into the everyday challenges faced by our criminal justice system." The festival will feature a variety of new events this year, including performances, a schools programme and an exhibition. There will be, in addition to a writer's talk, a forensic whodunit and a panel presentation. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester Cathedral, said, "Social justice is central to the gospel and to the Church of England's present day understanding. We hope that through Law Week and similar community focused events, Winchester Cathedral can contribute to building a better future for all, helping to bring people together, offering solidarity and supporting communities. We are proud to be part of Law Week 2024, an event that actively invites different voices and perspectives, shining a spotlight on the criminal justice system and how it affects large parts of our society." The event started on Saturday, October the 5th, with the University of Winchester's Death at the Cathedral, an interactive murder mystery puzzle for all ages. It will conclude the following weekend with Winchester Cathedral's Law Sunday service, an annual service of celebration for all those who work in law and order. Throughout Law Week 2024, schools from across Hampshire will be taking part in law-related activities. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Youth Commission will deliver their young people-led crime safety shop workshops to secondary schools, whilst the national justice system will take over part of Winchester Crown Court as it reenacts historical trials with nearly 200 primary school children.
Community bike ride success. A community bike ride attracted more than 30 people after a mass cycling event was postponed. On Saturday, September 28th, to mark the end of Green Week, residents of Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery organised a family-friendly ride. The event was held after Cycle Winchester's mass ride was postponed. The ride began in Stanmore and ended in Hursley, with stops and pick-up points along the way. Winchester families with children made up the majority of participants, with more than 30 people joining in. Cycling advocacy group Cycle Winchester supported and marshalled the ride. Sustainable Oliver's Battery, a community group, also lent its support to the event.
This is a story about the Clarendon Marathon entitled Hundreds Run for Fun Despite the Grey Skies. A marathon from Salisbury to Winchester has returned, with more than 600 runners taking part. This year's edition of the Clarendon Marathon, on Sunday the October 6th, took runners over mixed terrain through the countryside between the two cathedral cities. One retired Hampshire teacher proved age is just a number by running in the marathon to celebrate her 79th birthday. Anne Rowe, a member of Worthy Runners, completed the final 6.5-mile leg of the 26.2-mile cross-country relay race from Salisbury to Winchester. A regular at Winchester Park Run, Anne also runs with her club weekly and shows no signs of slowing down. She has already set her sights on participating in the Clarendon Relay Marathon again next year for her milestone 80th birthday. Anne from Kingsworthy said, "It's important to keep moving and not to stop as you get older. It doesn't matter if you run, dance or swim, just keep moving. I know I'm fortunate to still be running as I have two sisters with osteoporosis." The runners braved grey skies and light drizzle for the event, which started at Laverstock and Ford Sports Club and ended at King's School, where friends and family cheered runners over the finishing line. Tom Gray from Wanston, and wearing a St Peter's Pacers shirt, won the full marathon in 3 hours, 3 minutes and 21 seconds, while Neil Jennings took the half marathon in 1 hour, 30 minutes and 53 seconds, and Jasper Burrows the 5-mile race in 45 minutes and 46 seconds. Caroline Ralph was the fastest female in the marathon, and Katia Kazane in the half marathon. Bitcoin runners picked up the trophy for the relay marathon. Marathon winner Tom, who was placed third in the previous 2 years, said, "It was tough. Next year I aim to complete it in under 3 hours." Meanwhile, Father Mark Hogan, parish priest of St Peter's Catholic Church, ran the last leg of a mixed relay team from St Peter's Pacers. Commenting on the course, Joe Green from Winchester and District Athletics Club, WADAC, said, "It was really challenging, very hilly. The weather wasn't too bad, but it was quite slippery underfoot with lots of tree roots and gullies." Organised by the Rotary Club of Winchester, the marathon saw many returning participants, including David Wright, age 59, who ran in the first event in 1998 and won in 1999. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith, congratulated runners as they crossed the finishing line. He praised the marathon for raising large sums for local charities. "I am really impressed by Rotary Club, who put the event together so it runs like clockwork."
Just before I read my next piece, following on from the marathon, just to correct something that was in the article, there were in fact just over 1,000 runners this year, which is the most ever. And the reason I know that is because Winchester Talking Newspaper, for about 14 years now, has manned one of the water stations. And we did it again on Sunday. There were 6 of us doing it. And luckily, not a drop of rain fell, although it was forecast. Mm-hmm. And it just rained like billy-o when we all got home. But it was a great event. My piece, then. Police concern at subway plan. A sandwich shop in Winchester has applied to extend its open hours despite police concerns that it could lead to crime and disorder. The subway in the Broadway wants to extend its operation to include 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. from Thursday to Saturday. Because it wants to provide service for the surrounding pubs and club leavers, Mr. Rehan Rayman, the owner, submitted an application to Winchester City Council. However, Hampshire Constabulary has raised concerns about the potential increase in crime, disorder and antisocial behaviour incidents at the site and among the staff. Police added that even though the shop would not be selling alcohol, it would have drunk persons entering. Therefore, the bravado and aggression would be heightened. Despite the concerns, the police have offered some mitigating suggestions, such as installing CCTV, employing a security person at the front door, and mandating the use of body-worn video, usually known as BMW, by the security officer. Yet Mr. Rayman said that because it's a small organisation with limited resources, it cannot employ a guard. Instead, he suggested that the shop could provide a security radio linked to the security guards in the area, specifically the ones in Alfie's Pub, a neighbouring business. In light of Mr. Raymond's comments, Alfie's general manager, Mr. Craig Friswell, has objected to the application. He said that the pub's employed door supervisors are there to handle and help prevent any issues at its venue. And in case of any major incident, its team cannot be responsible for or used as a rapid first response. Mr. Friswell said, in the event of a major incident where no police presence was in the immediate vicinity, we would, if possible, try to aid any neighbours with any issues as we have done in the past. But my team cannot be responsible for or use as a rapid first response to issues that might occur at any late night refreshment venue on a regular basis. In fact, the provision of door supervisors at a venue stops the smaller incidents from becoming larger ones. He also highlighted that the pub is open only until 3 a.m. and security is dispersing people from the area. Winchester City Council will make a final decision on October the 10th.
Cafe among winners of design awards. A Winchester cafe was among the winners of the South Downs Design Awards. In the non-residential category, the Handlebar Cafe in Winchester was the winner. The Cycle Cafe and Bike Shop. Bike Workshop. The Cycle Cafe and Bike Workshop was originally the idea of a group of local teenagers who envisioned trains passing on a bridge. It is sited on the former Newbury to Winchester Railway, which closed in the 1960s. Judges said, the judges were very taken with the genesis of this project, which originated from ideas and sketches by local teenagers with no formal design training. Other winners were a wildlife haven, an eco-friendly house, and a renovated farmstead. The winners were announced at a ceremony at the South Downs Centre in Midhurst on October the 2nd. The awards recognise high standards of architectural and landscape design and promote creativity and understanding of the national park through design. More than 60 nominations were received earlier in 2023, with 16 unique projects shortlisted from Sussex and Hampshire.
This article is entitled, Leader Says Targets for Housing Are Excessive. The Labour government's proposed new housing targets for Hampshire are excessive and undeliverable, the county council leader said. Since the government's proposal to introduce mandatory housing targets as part of an updated National Planning Policy Framework, the NPPF, concerns have been raised over the implications for Greenbelt and the housing targets, which have been criticised. At a recent full council meeting, leader of Hampshire County Council, councillor Nick Adams-King, Conservative, said that while he welcomed the public consultation about the changes, the NPPF targets for Hampshire are excessive and undeliverable. Under the plans, housing targets would be increased by 71% a year in Hampshire. For Winchester, its current target of 676 new homes a year would balloon to 1,099. It is part of Labour's election pledge to build 1.5 million new homes over the next 5 years.
Local heroes needed for lights switch on. The date for the annual Christmas lights switch on in Winchester has been revealed. The event, which is organised by Winchester BID, will take place on the Broadway outside the Guildhall on Thursday, November the 14th. The night will include live performances and a visit from Santa's sleigh. As part of the community-focused event, Winchester BID is launching its search for local heroes. These local heroes will help press the giant red button just before 6:30 p.m. to light up the city. This year's event will be hosted by Heart Radio and will include a giant inflatable snow globe and live performances from Harestock Primary School Choir, the Pilgrim School Chamber Choir, Winchester a cappella, Integrate Dance, Rubik's Cube, Theatre Royal Winchester, Rock Choir and Diva Academy. The snow globe and Santa's sleigh will be in the square from 12 p.m. and will be raising money for various charities. Winchester BID manager Sarah Davis said, "We are delighted to be coordinating the Christmas light switch on again this year. A big thank you to the event sponsor, Dutton Gregory Solicitors. This will be a fun-filled community event that brings together the city of Winchester. It's also the perfect opportunity to shine the spotlight on local community heroes, which is why we'll be searching for well-deserving local people to help switch on this year's Christmas lights."
Woman honoured for blazing trail on buses. One of the first female bus drivers has been honoured with a plaque in Winchester. Mary Curry was a trailblazer, being one of the first two female drivers at Hanson Dorset Company in 1973. Women in Bus and Coach, in partnership with Stagecoach, have unveiled a commemorative plaque at Winchester bus station to honour her. The event paid tribute to her breaking gender barriers in the industry and her lasting impact on generations of women drivers. The plaque unveiling, which is the first plaque as part of a new national initiative by Women in Bus and Coach to recognise trailblazing women across all roles in the bus, coach and community transport industry, took place on Thursday, October the 3rd, with representatives from Stagecoach, Women in Bus and Coach, key local dignitaries and Mary in attendance. Mary Curry of Meanstoke, along with her colleague, made history over 50 years ago by stepping into a role traditionally dominated by men. Her determination, skill and passion paved the way for women across the UK to pursue careers in transport, a profession where women now play a vital and growing role. Mark Reddy, Managing Director for Stagecoach South, said, "Mary Curry's story is one of perseverance, courage and breaking boundaries. By recognising her, we hope to continue inspiring more women to consider careers in bus and coach driving. Her legacy lives on in every woman who has taken the driver's seat and continues to challenge outdated norms in the industry." Stagecoach has been working closely with Women in Bus and Coach to ensure that women have equal opportunities in the sector and are celebrated for their contributions. Louise Cheeseman, Women in Bus Coach Chair, said, "Mary Curry is a true pioneer and we are honoured to have celebrated her achievement at Winchester Bus Station, where she started her journey. This plaque is a testament to her trailblazing spirit and the progress we continue to make in promoting equality and inclusion in the workplace. And we look forward to unveiling many more across the country in the months to come. The unveiling of the plaque is a timely reminder of the importance of diversity within the workforce and a celebration of the women who continue to shape the future of the transport industry. Women in Bus and Coach is a national initiative to encourage, represent, support and retain women in the bus, coach and community transport profession.
Meanwhile, runners celebrating 20 years of Park Run. Runners in parks across the country have laced up their trainers to celebrate the 20th birthday of one of Britain's most successful fitness phenomenons, Park Run. Winchester was no exception, with 444 athletes of all ages taking part in this Saturday's, which was October the 5th, edition at River Park Recreation Ground. Volunteer and sometime Park Run participant, Tony Herlin, age 81 of Winchester, said, "I think the whole of Park Run is just a miraculous movement. I can't believe it's been so successful. I started at the age of 76, and I was welcomed here after I retired from a career in club running." Tony explained how he reached a high level through his club after having started age 40, once clocking a 34-minute 10K, but that Park Run provided the ideal way to wind down and enjoy the sport a little more. Pointing out a couple strolling around the 5-kilometre course with their baby, he said that the event really is for anyone and everyone. Another volunteer, Carol Pusey, age 68, said, "I love doing it. I run sometimes and I volunteer sometimes. It's really nice because it brings together all ages. You have everybody from babies to people over 80. It's also quite a simple thing. You just have to turn up." The winner on the day was Ben Smith, age 42, and he's photographed. Ben, who is a member of Winchester Fit Club, described Park Run as an excuse to get out of bed on Saturday morning and do some exercise. The first Park Run took place on October 2nd in 2004, with just 13 runners and 5 volunteers at Bushy Park in Teddington. 20 years later, there have been a total of 3,395,615 finishers, 459,171 volunteers, and 288,840 park runs. It is the most popular regular public event in the district, being run every Saturday of the year.
And finally, some news from Marwell Zoo.
Oh, good.
Red panda Tashi gets a female companion. A new companion has arrived for Tashi, Marwell Zoo's male red panda. The female red panda, named Cherry, was welcomed from Manor Wildlife Park in Wales. Cherry, age 7, is settling into her new home where she will share the zoo's red panda habitat with Tashi, who arrived last year. Carrie Arnold, Carnivore's team leader, said, "We're excited to welcome Cherry to Marwell. Red pandas are endangered in the wild, where they have been hunted for meat, medicine and fur, as well as being sold into the pet market. Whilst they may look cute," and there is actually a photograph here showing a very cute Cherry, "they have very sharp teeth and claws and fur over their whole bodies, including under their paws. Red pandas are known for their unique false thumb, an enlargement of one of the bones in their wrist, which allows them to grab and hold onto things, mainly bamboo, and climb down trees head first. Tashi will have access to 2 other pods until the keepers decide they are ready to be mixed in a few weeks' time. The species is classified as endangered on the International Union for Conservation of Nature Red List, with populations continuing to decline." That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Hilary Parsons, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Heather Bryant.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please put the memory stick as soon as you... Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.